From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, NBC aired Donald Trump's inflammatory anti-immigration ad during Sunday Night Football. Was that unsportsmanlike conduct? Then the new movie, The Front Runner, tells the story of how Senator Gary Hart's run for president in 1987 was derailed by a sex scandal. Hugh Jackman says that playing the complex candidate was a challenge.
Much easier to play something definitive, very clear emotion, clear action. You know, that's much easier. As in life, we tend to want simple answers to very complicated questions, you know. This film doesn't offer that.
All that coming up on The Frame.
KPCC podcasts are supported by the Netflix film The Other Side of the Wind. Witness the last film from legendary director Orson Welles, a cinematic event 40 years in the making. The Other Side of the Wind, streaming now only on Netflix.
Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. The inflammatory migrant caravan ad that was produced by Donald Trump's re-election campaign was pulled from NBC on Monday morning. The ad, which ran during Sunday Night Football, shows an unrepentant, undocumented immigrant who was convicted of killing two California sheriff's deputies in 2014. He is juxtaposed with footage of people who are currently fleeing Central America to come to the United States. Fox News and Fox Business Network also pulled the ad. Last week, it was rejected by CNN, which called it racist. So what went into the decision to air such a controversial ad? Marisa Guthrie covers the media for The Hollywood Reporter, and she joined us by phone today. And I started our conversation by asking her how the ad made it on the air.
NBC Universal Ad Sales has a big department that covers sports, that covers entertainment, that covers news, and they are the ones that book all the advertising. Now, the NFL is a special distinction, and the NFL has stated standards for advertising, and there are several categories that they expressly prohibit. Social and advocacy issue advertising is one of them. This is a campaign ad. You would assume it would fall into that category.
Is there any information about how they accepted it? Because if they prohibit social cause issue advocacy advertising and the ad is not only racist but apparently also inaccurate, how does it get on the air?
That is something of a mystery, but not completely. So, first of all, the ad that a lot of people saw on the internet had blamed Democrats, and I'm using air quotes around Democrats, for letting this person enter the country illegally and for allowing him to stay. The Washington Post did a fact check on this. He entered the country multiple times during both Republican and Democratic administrations. He appears to have entered the country the last time during the administration of George W. Bush. They stripped that particular part of the ad out in the version that you saw on Sunday Night Football. That part of it was not in the ad. So that was one way they could have possibly gotten around airing something that wasn't true.
The other fact that's also important is that he apparently had been released by former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who is obviously very close to President Trump. So NBC now says, I'm quoting the network, "After further review, we recognize the insensitive nature of the ad and have decided to cease airing it across our properties as soon as possible." So two questions. Are there more properties besides NBC where this ad ran? And how did NBC not know that this ad was potentially insensitive? Because CNN had already refused to run it.
It's confusing and perplexing that NBC did not realize before they ran the ad that it was could be considered insensitive, racist, other adjectives that have been used to describe it. It's generated a lot of attention. CNN put out a statement about it calling the ad racist. They put out that statement in response to Donald Trump Jr., who complained that the ad was submitted to CNN and they rejected it. Sources at CBS and ABC tell me the ad has not been submitted to them. Fox News was airing the ad, but this morning the president of Fox News Ad Sales said that they would no longer air the ad. So it's hard to understand why they didn't take a look at this ad and realize how problematic it could have been before they aired it. I mean, don't forget, less than 2 weeks ago in New York City, we had a series of pipe bombs mailed to CNN and to a bunch of Democrats and targets of President Trump. It's hard for me to understand how they could have not known that this was a controversial ad and also an insensitive ad.
And I think we might understand why they pulled it, because a number of people close to NBC have attacked the network's decision. Deborah Messing from Will and Grace said in a tweet to our Will and Grace fans, "I want you to know that I am ashamed that my network aired this disgusting racist ad. It is the antithesis of everything I personally believe in and what I believe our show is all about." And producer Judd Apatow, who has made several movies for NBC Universal, said on Twitter, "It was a low point in the history of NBC. Who will explain their reasoning for promoting racism during this football game?" So is it possible that NBC was reacting to the in-house backlash?
Oh, yes, entirely possible. There were also just a lot of non-famous people watching Sunday Night Football who were shocked and appalled by this ad, and it's possible that NBC saw that reaction and heard from them. I mean, football is supposed to be a broadly skewing, popular American entertainment product. And while I'm sure they have plenty of Republican fans, I'm sure they also have plenty of fans who are Democrats, who are Hispanic, who could have legitimately found offense to this ad.
NBC and NBC News have been in a lot of trouble lately. Matt Lauer was let go from the Today Show for apparent sexual assault. NBC News apparently didn't want to run Ronan Farrow's investigation into Harvey Weinstein. How much does this hurt NBC overall, do you think?
This decision about the ad was not made by NBC News, obviously. It was made in the ad sales department on the corporate level. So those things are separate. I don't think you can equate one issue with the other and say that, you know, this adds to NBC's woes. It's a wake-up call for companies who might not have scrutinized this kind of rhetoric, and especially after what we've just witnessed, you know, the shootings in the synagogue in Pittsburgh and how hateful rhetoric may have motivated that violence.
And I think it's clear this ad is not going away, even though Facebook has been talking about taking it down. As we talk, it is on Trump's Facebook page. Marisa Guthrie covers the media for The Hollywood Reporter. Marisa, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, John.
After we taped that interview, the National Football League issued a statement that says, quote, "The NFL played no role in the airing of the spot last night. The NFL has no approval rights regarding campaign ads. That falls to the network that is selling the advertising and airing the game," unquote. Up next on The Frame, a new movie about the presidential campaign that turned the sexual lives of politicians into fair game for the media.
KPCC podcast supporters include UCLA's Center for the Art of Performance, presenting LA's Uncabaret, celebrating 25 years with this one-time-only evening of live comedy, music, and never-before-seen footage from the vault. Featuring Beth Lapidus, Julia Sweeney, Janine Garofalo, Bob Odenkirk, Greg Barron, and Jill Soloway. Also featuring Maria Bamford, Julie Goldman, Byron Bowers, Justin Sayer, and surprise guests. Tickets at cap.ucla.edu.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. After you voted tomorrow, you can go to the movies and revisit another election, one from 30 years ago. The frontrunner from filmmaker Jason Reitman tells the story of how an extramarital affair derailed the once promising presidential run by Democratic Senator Gary Hart. In 1987, rumors of affairs dogged Hart. But even before he dared the media to follow him around, a team from the Miami Herald did just that. They staked out his Washington townhouse, where a woman named Donna Rice was visiting him. Hart, played in the film by Hugh Jackman, never confirmed or denied the affair, not even to his own campaign staff.
"They can write all this crap all they want.
They will not earn the dignity of my response."
"Jesus, Gary, what about us? Do we deserve a response?
About this?
Yeah.
No.
The Donna Rice story led the media to abandon the unwritten rules around what was fair game to ask politicians. Hart ended up dropping out of the race, but not before warning where this all could lead us.
Politics in this country, take it from me, is on the verge of becoming another form of athletic competition or sporting match. We all better do something to make this system work. We're all going to be soon rephrasing Jefferson to say, I tremble for my country when I think we may, in fact, get the kind of leaders we deserve.
I met up with Hugh Jackman and Jason Reitman over Labor Day weekend at the Telluride Film Festival, where The Frontrunner premiered. Just hours earlier, Reitman had shown the film to Hart and his wife, Lee, not far away in another part of Colorado.
You know, it was nerve-wracking. I've never made a movie about real people. All my films up until now have been fictitious. And the day before I arrived in Telluride, I was in Denver, Colorado with Gary and Lee Hart. And we watched the movie, and then we went all for hot chocolate together.
At least they're still having chocolate with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a really lovely, thoughtful conversation, you know, and I'll let them weigh in on the movie when they want to. But, you know, I will say that they both really admired Hugh's performance. They thought it was incredible. And at one point, Gary said, do I really talk like that? And Lee said, yes, that's exactly
really?
How you speak.
Yeah. Is that what he said,
yeah.
Really?
Oh,
boy.
That's high praise.
And the campaign team, you showed it to as well.
Yeah. I showed it to the entire campaign team, and Donna has seen the film, and that was a kind of a remarkable reaction as well. And she found that the movie was very empathetic to her, and that meant a lot to all of us. I have to imagine that Donna Rice is someone who, for 30 years, is wondering how her life was stolen from her.
There's the picture of you with Donna Rice perched on your lap.
Yes.
On the boat.
No, it wasn't on the boat.
Well...
On a pier, on a public pier.
On a public pier.
Yeah.
Again, Senator, we're not now talking about having men and women for friends. We're talking about something that certainly has about it every possible impression of impropriety.
I know.
So before we talk about what happened to Gary Hart, I want to talk about his ideas, because in many ways he was generations ahead of some of the biggest stories that we're talking about today. Energy independence, mm-hmm. and what that's going to mean in terms of the Middle East and terrorism, immigration, what would become of the former Soviet Union, the digital economy. I could go on and on and on.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, and you're kind of outlining it perfectly. I mean, here's a guy who really was ahead of the game, both on a kind of broad spectrum, but also in these kind of unbelievable anecdotal details, understanding our reliance on oil in the Middle East, predicting 9/11, understanding the importance of computers in our lives, and wanted to legislate these ideas in a real way.
Hugh, I want to ask you a little bit about how much you knew about Hart before you started work on this project.
Mm-hmm.
Were you familiar
Very
with
little.
The story? Where did
No.
you, and where did you find your path into understanding him as an actor?
Monkey Business was somehow in my brain somewhere. I think I'd heard of Donna Rice. I'd heard of Gary Hart. It was 1987. I was on a gap year through Europe. So I don't think any or if any, really, world affairs were going into my head at that point. Started with the script, talking with Jason, and then pretty exhaustive research. And I met the Harts, and they were very gracious. Spent some time with them, which I thought was important out of respect, but also just to get a deeper understanding of the man and who he is today. But his history, the scandal itself that week, politics as it was, I'm an Australian, so I needed to learn a lot about what it is. I didn't really understand fully the political system like I understand it now.
I don't understand it now, so you're ahead of me. Did you find that there were little things that added up into your understanding of how you're going to play him? How did you figure out what it was that you could capture from the research and from the man himself that gave you the tools necessary to play him in the film?
Well, first of all, like Jason, I have never played someone who is alive and would see the film, and that was nerve-wracking. And I take every job very seriously, but perhaps this had another level for me. And I watched a lot of video, obviously spent time with him, spent a lot of time talking with people who worked with him. And the number one thing that kept coming back to me was how much of an enigma he is as a public and private figure to campaign members, even people close to him, to reporters, everybody. And that, of course, as an actor, is one of the, for me, one of the most daunting things.
Mm-hmm. Because you're playing something that isn't something, right?
Well, when you train as an actor, it's about making choices, about understanding motivation. It's what am I playing in the scene? And with Gary, it's never one thing. It's never one thing on all of those questions. So I don't think without Jason, honestly, I would have had the courage to trust that the mystery or not making exact decisions was the right choice to make. Much easier to play something definitive, very clear emotion, clear action. This is my, you know, that's much easier. As in life, we tend to want simple answers to very complicated questions, you know. This film doesn't offer that, and playing Gary, that's a luxury you can't afford.
We're talking with Jason Reitman, the director and co-screenwriter, the front runner, and Hugh Jackman, who plays Gary Hart in the film. Jason, you're telling a story that's about real events, and in the nature of storytelling and writing a film and directing a film, you have to come up with composite characters, yeah. You have to invent dialogue. When you were thinking about the choices that you're making, what was the guiding principle? When you always said, this is the film we're making and this is the story that we're telling, that even if we're going to alter facts, this is the truth that we're trying to get at. How would you define the truth of what those decisions always led to?
This is a screenplay that was co-written by three people. A journalist, a campaign insider, and the son of the director of Ghostbusters. So, I didn't bring a lot to the table, but you know, Matt Bai covered the Obama White House, you know, New York Times Magazine, now Yahoo News. Obviously, tremendously seasoned journalist. Jay Carson, press secretary Howard Dean, both Clintons, wrote on House of Cards. I think the guiding principle was them filling this movie with as much real detail from their lives as possible. What is it like to be in a campaign room? What is it really like to be working at a newspaper? It can't be just all the important questions. It can't be just important conversations all the time. I bet you're talking about a lot of bullshit too, and we wanted those rooms to feel real. That's why we kept on going back to the movie The Candidate. The Candidate is a film where you are constantly trying to ask yourself, what's the important conversation going on here? And of course, that acts as a lovely metaphor for this movie. This whole movie is about what is relevant. Visually, we're giving you multiple things to look at all times. Through audio, we're giving you a lot of things to listen to. I think if there was a guiding principle is three things must be happening at all times on screen, one important and like two ridiculous. And so how do we feel all of that with authentic detail so when you are in the movie, even if you've never worked at a paper, even if you've never been on a campaign, even if you don't understand half the things that are happening, which I didn't because I haven't done either of those things, you go, oh yeah, this feels real.
It's impossible to look at this movie and not think about things that have happened recently. And you don't make any overt point of saying this happened then and this is what's happening now. But if people are having conversations coming out of this film about what happened to Gary Hart, whose political career ended forever in 5 days, and the man in the White House who has been linked to numerous extramarital affairs, who is accused of sexually assaulting and harassing women, and who has talked about women in the most despicable terms. How, as a filmmaker, do you think that your film about Gary Hart informs the way we should look at modern politics today?
You know, I mentioned this before, but I think it's a conversation point. We're all looking for a way to talk about this. And we had our premiere last night here at Telluride. The thing that I am most thrilled about right now is the conversations that I've been hearing about that happened after the movie. That people were walking out of the theater and some were fighting with each other. But they are in heated debate about the purpose of the movie and the questions the movie is asking and how that relates to right now. I don't have the answers on that. I'm as confused as anyone else how the hell we got here in 2018 and I'm searching for answers. I mean, this is why we make movies, is we're looking for answers. We're trying to answer these questions. And I'm really just hoping that the movie offers one more angle so that we can have rational conversation about a world that is very confusing right now.
Coming up, Jason Reitman and Hugh Jackman on how the story of Gary Hart in the media lives on today.
KPCC podcasts are supported by the Netflix film The Other Side of the Wind. Witness the last film from legendary director Orson Welles, The Other Side of the Wind, the story of a director named J.J. Jake Hannaford, who returns to Hollywood from years of semi-exile in Europe with plans to complete work on his own innovative comeback movie, also entitled The Other Side of the Wind, a cinematic event 40 years in the making. The Other Side of the Wind, now streaming only on Netflix.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. We're talking about the new film, The Front Runner, which opens tomorrow. It's rare for a movie to be released in theaters on a Tuesday, but given that tomorrow's Election Day, it's fitting. The Front Runner revisits a moment more than 30 years ago when the way that the media covered politicians changed for good and not necessarily for the better. It was 1987, and Senator Gary Hart of Colorado was leading the pack by a wide margin to be the Democratic presidential nominee. But he was confronted about a presumed extramarital affair outside his Washington, D.C. townhouse by a couple of journalists from the Miami Herald. Hart was furious over their stakeout, and he never directly answered questions about the affair. Yet, within a week, he dropped out of the race and was pretty much finished in politics. The film, which stars Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart, is based on the book All the Truth Is Out by Matt Bai. We pick up my conversation now with Jackman and Jason Reitman. He directed the movie and co-wrote the script with Bai and veteran political consultant Jay Carson.
Journalists now more than ever are under a tremendous amount of pressure. And they were under a tremendous amount of pressure the week of the Gary Hart scandal. I mean, that's what makes the movie kind of an entertaining thriller, is the idea that the presumed president, next president of the United States, wound up in a dark alleyway with three journalists, each not knowing exactly what to do because no one had ever been in that situation before. There's something thrilling about that. I mean, that's why I wanted to make a movie. And in the ensuing week, you add the Miami Herald, the Washington Post, and frankly, every newspaper trying to figure out, what are we supposed to be reporting here? What is the story here? What is relevant and what is important, which is that great Gary Hart line. And this story offered an opportunity to look at these questions from the point of view of his campaign staff, who's trying to figure out what the right thing is, the Miami Herald, the Washington Post, his own family, a marriage at the center of this crisis that's trying to kind of hold on in the midst of a hurricane.
We're all going to have to seriously question the system for selecting our national leaders that reduces the press of this nation to hunters and presidential candidates to being hunted, that has reporters in bushes, false and inaccurate stories printed, photographers peeking in our windows, swarms of helicopters hovering over our roof, and my very strong wife close to tears because she can't even get in her own house at night without being harassed.
No one has any easy answer as far as what should we know about our candidates' personal lives. I mean, now, truly more than ever. And what I think we both hope is that this is a film that offers a prism of 1987 to look at today. It's tricky to talk about 2018 without getting into an argument, you know? We're kind of tearing each other apart at this point. And it's nice to actually be able to look three decades back and have another story that gives us an access point to have these conversations in a rational way.
But Hugh, do you have an access point to that story based on what you do professionally, that often the people who want to talk about your work are not interested in the story that you're telling, but about things that have happened in your personal life that are none of their business?
I don't feel that I experience celebrity journalism in the way most people expect. Occasionally I do. I generally have a kind of empathy for most journalists. I know when they're asking me a question that they're embarrassed by or feel is beneath them. I studied journalism and majored in journalism, and our last class was ethics in journalism.
That lasted 30 seconds, that class?
for me, it put me off going into the business because I realized how difficult it is. But my personal experience with fame feels far easier and less complicated than it was for Gary. Gary says a lot, and he said in his final speech, I was never good at talking about myself. That's something before getting into public life. That's just not who he was.
Since getting into politics a long time ago, there are at least two things I haven't been very good at. talking about myself and playing the political game.
So you have that natural thing, and I'm an actor. I'll talk about myself all day long. So that's something I don't relate to. But that, as well as him understanding that every time he invests in that side of the conversation, it debits from the importance of the issues. Mm. And him trying to constantly sort of bargain and wager and work out what is the formula here where I can make sure we're talking about what's important.
I think history, and you could define it as the media, has been unkind to Donna Rice. And it feels as if your film wants to correct that.
I don't know how you can't look at Donna Rice and feel empathy for her. I mean, this is a young woman who literally, basically, her story is she went to a party, she met a guy, and a few weeks later, her entire life was stolen from her. And she had to kind of cleave that back as people hounded her. And she had no operation around her. She didn't have a legal team and PR people who were going to, you know, teach her how to come up with quotes and teach her what to do when reporters are finding her apartment and banging on her doors and she has to, like, get, you know, police escorts just to try to get food back into her apartment. Donna Rice does not realize in real time what she's losing and how quickly she's losing it.
Well, I think the same can be said of Gary Hart. He doesn't really realize and appreciate what's happening. And it almost seems, as I suspect happened, that it's almost like an out-of-body experience that he's having, that he doesn't really comprehend what is unfolding, and he has nothing in his abilities to change the direction of it.
To be fair to Gary, all the polls at the time said the public felt the media had gone too far. Gary obviously felt they were going too far. And this is one of the great ironies of Gary, who is probably, if he has one superpower as a politician, it was being able to see 10 years ahead, 20 years ahead. In this particular aspect of media and the media's coverage of politics, he was blind to that. He did not see it. He didn't believe it. And you could argue miscalculate, although what I love about the movie is perhaps him standing by that principle that answering those questions and going down that road is beneath the office he's running for is also perhaps a wonderful quality.
Jason and Hugh, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Hugh Jackman plays Gary Hart in the new film, The Front Runner. Jason Reitman co-wrote and directed the movie. It opens in theaters on November 6th. And that's The Frame for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
We're gonna run to all on that day. Will I run to the rock? Please hide me and run to